Okay, and today is June 28th, and we're continuing in our teaching series on learning to lambano, learning how to receive from God, learning how to walk with God, operating the manifestations of the Holy Spirit that He's given to us. And we've been learning a lot from Old Testament records. Even though the spirit that they had was not the same spirit that we've received in the new birth. Jesus Christ made a statement, and I didn't look it up, so I'm just quoting from memory, John the Baptist was the greatest of all the prophets. He said, there's not risen a prophet greater than John the Baptist. But he said, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. Right? I'll have to look it up and look at it next time it's in one of the Gospels. But when he made that statement, that indicates that of all the prophets that we are looking at, Moses, Jeremiah, Samuel, we'll look at Joshua today. They were great men and walked with God. And yet, he who is least in the kingdom of heaven, which includes all those that are born again, because he said, except a man be born again, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven, right? So all those that are born again have something greater than what these Old Testament prophets had. But yet we can learn a lot from those Old Testament prophets, because the way that the revelation manifestations work is so very similar. And we've looked at Jeremiah and how God trained him, worked with him, how to receive revelation and to know that it was accurate. We looked at Samuel, how God started preparing him to be a prophet when he was a little boy, gave him revelation and confirmed it to him. We looked at Moses and how when he was 80 years old, he taught him how to receive revelation and do miracles. And today we want to look at Joshua. There's a lot about Joshua, so we won't be able to cover everything this morning. But what I want to look at this morning is how God prepared Joshua to be a prophet and to be a leader of God's people. Oh. Doug looked up those verses for me that I was referring to. And it's Matthew 11, verse 11 says, verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women, there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. Okay? So there's our documentation that what we have, what we've been given, is greater than what was given to the Old Testament prophets. So we're not going to look at these men and what they did as if they're way up here and we're way down here. They're way up here, but God set us far above all principality and power and might and dominion and every name that is named as members of the body of Christ, because everything is far under His feet, and we have the privilege of being, foot level and above. Right? So when it comes to Joshua, very important man in the Old Testament, first mentioned in Exodus chapter 17. Now it was Joshua that led the people of Israel into the Promised Land after the death of Moses. It was Joshua, the God gave instructions concerning crossing the Jordan River, how the waters parted for Joshua and Israel, just as the Red Sea had parted for Moses and Israel. It was Joshua, the God commanded regarding Jericho and how they marched around the city, 6 days, and then they gave a shout and the walls fell down flat. And they conquered the city, and then they conquered one after another through the Promised Land. But everybody starts somewhere, right? So this is our first mention of Joshua, is in chapter 17, in verse 8. It says, "Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim." So the Israelites are in the promised land. They had just had a situation where there was no water to drink, and they all complained to Moses, and God told Moses to go on the top of Mount Horeb and smite the rock of flint with his rod, and water came out of the rock, and like rivers of water that all the people and the animals drank from. But while the people were in that thirsty situation, they were kind of weakened, and the Amalekites, they attacked them from behind. God didn't like that very much. In verse 9, Moses sent it to Joshua, and this is the first time Joshua's name is mentioned. He said unto Joshua, "Choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with a rod of God in mine hand." So Joshua did as Moses had said to him, and fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. So this is the battle where Moses, he held the rod in his hand. As long as he held it up, Israel would win. When you get tired, you know, he's an 80-year-old guy, then the Amalekites start winning. So they took a big stone, they let Moses sit on it, and they had Aaron on one side and a guy named Hur on the other side, and they held his hands up. So it worked. But Joshua was the one leading the battle. Joshua was the one that picked out the soldiers. Joshua was the one who was on the front lines commanding the army. And, you know, so apparently he had some ability as a leader. He could command the people and they would follow him and do what he said. And he was obedient to Moses and to God. Because when God said, go get the people and fight against the Amalekites, he didn't argue with them. He didn't say, well, who am I to, you know, lead this army? And he just did it. You know, he doesn't even say anything that he said to Moses. He just did it. So Moses gave him instructions. Joshua carried him out. Later on in chapter 24, this is where Moses, by God's instruction, goes up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, and God talks to him there and gives him the Ten Commandments written on tables of stone that God cuts out of the rock and God writes on the stone tablets. And look at verse 12. It says, "And the Lord said unto Moses," this is God talking to Moses personally, "Come up to me into the mount and be there, and I will give thee tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written, that thou mayest teach them. And Moses rose up and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up into the mount of God. And he said unto the elders, tarry ye here for us until we come again unto you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man have any matters to do, let him come unto them." So Joshua has the privilege of accompanying Moses up on the mountain where God gives him the Ten Commandments and tells him all about, you know, the tabernacle and how that would be constructed. Joshua's there with Moses. Joshua, it says, is Moses' minister. That means his personal attendant. He was like his assistant, his right-hand man. So that was a great privilege for him to witness this, you know, firsthand and be up there with Moses. We also know that while he was up there 40 days and 40 nights, Moses didn't eat or drink anything. I don't know if Joshua brought some trail mix with him, but in a canteen or something like that, but apparently didn't eat or drink anything either those 40 days. And also during that time, all the other people, including Aaron and her and everybody else, made this golden calf. And if you go to chapter 32, because they may have presumed Moses to be dead, being up in that mountain for so long without food or water. In chapter 32, verse 1, it says, when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount.
Is she stuck?
No. Yeah, she's just causing a fuss. Calm down, Lucy. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, and again, it had been 40 days, that's a long time, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods, which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him. Wot means we don't know what's happened to him. Well, hadn't Moses given them commandments of God already at this point, and they had agreed to it? And the first of the commandments is, no graven images, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And they swore to it. They said, we will obey this. But 40 days went by, and now they're ready to abandon everything just because, you know, the guy that gave them the information hasn't come down out of the mountain yet. And verse 2 says, and Aaron said unto them, Moses' own brother, the high priest, said unto them, break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives or your sons or your daughters, and bring them unto me. And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them unto Aaron. And they made this golden calf. We're going to skip down to verse 15. And they had a big party. Verse 15, and Moses turned and went down from the mount, and the two tables of the testimony were in his hand. The tables were written on both their sides, on the one side and on the other side they were written. And the tables were the work of God, and their writing was the writing of God graven upon the tables. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said unto Moses, there's a noise of war in the camp. And he said, is not the voice of them that shout for the mastery, neither is it the voice of them that cry for being overcome, but the noise of them that do sing do I hear. And it came to pass, as soon as he came up into the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger waxed hot, and he cast the tables out of his hand and break them beneath the mount. And he had to take care of that situation. But it's interesting that of all the people of Israel, the only two that were not participating or witnessing this golden calf thing were Moses and Joshua. Joshua was the only one besides Moses who didn't participate in this golden calf event. Everybody else either was actively participating or was watching by, not doing anything about it. But Joshua was not among them. In chapter 33, verse 8. Now, while Moses was up in the mountain, God had given him instructions to make a tabernacle, a tent, where the Ark of the Ark of the Covenant and all these things. And then there was some guys that God put his spirit upon them that they could physically make these things. And then Moses confirmed that, yeah, what they made was exactly what God had shown him by revelation in the mountain, which is interesting in itself, but it's tedious reading. But the result is pretty wild, that God gave one man revelation, others, they made it, and then Moses confirmed when he saw the physical object, he said, yes, this is exactly what God showed me. So you see the Spirit of God working in more than one person to accomplish something pretty cool. Now, once the tabernacle was made, you know, we know that they did sacrifices there, the Levites and the family of Aaron specifically did the sacrifices. The Levites were the ones that would take up and take down and reassemble the tabernacle and move it. Moses could just go in there any time and talk with God. He didn't have to follow any protocols. You know, Aaron could only go into the Holy of Holies once a year, but Moses could go in any day. God would just call him, say, Moses, meet me in the tabernacle. And Joshua would go with him. Look at this. Yeah. Verse 8. And it came to pass when Moses went out unto the tabernacle that all the people rose up and stood every man at his tent door and looked after Moses until he was gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass as Moses entered into the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. And all the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose up and worshipped, every man in his tent door. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again into the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. Meaning when Moses went into the tabernacle, Joshua went with him. He didn't have to stay outside like everybody else. Mm. Everybody else in Israel, they watched from their tent door. They saw the cloudy pillar come down. And they knew Moses is in there talking with God. But Joshua has a front row seat. Joshua's right there in the tabernacle when Moses is there and God's talking with him face to face as a man would talk to his friend. You know, that's a privilege that only one man had, to witness this God working with Moses like that. Now let's go to Numbers chapter 13. In Numbers chapter 13, the time has come to enter the promised land that God had sworn to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is the whole reason he brought them out of Egypt. They had all those plagues so that Pharaoh would let the people go. They had the Passover. They went through the Red Sea. God fed them with manna. They got water for them. The tabernacle was built. You know, the Ten Commandments were given. All these things happened. And now they're supposed to go in, you know, they're supposed to conquer the land. So the people said, well, before we go in, how about we do a little reconnaissance? Let's send in some spies to, you know, see what this land is like. Because, you know, they didn't have Google Earth in those days. So they couldn't just go online and say, okay, this is the lay of the land and what it looks like. So they had the guys go in there. And they spent 40 days searching out the land, and they came back with their report. Now, there were 12 spies that went in. They had one from each tribe. If you look at chapter 13 and in verse 8, it says, of the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun. Hoshea. Now, if you look at verse 16, it says, these are the names of the men which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Jehoshua. This is the same as Joshua, okay? So his original name was, or his official name was Hoshea, which means deliverer. And when you put the Jehoshua, that means Jehovah, the deliverer, God, the deliverer. It's the same name as Jesus. In fact, there's a verse in, I think, Hebrews that talks about Jesus had given the people of Israel rest. It means Joshua. It doesn't mean Jesus Christ. It's talking about Joshua. But it translates it the same as Jesus. So the name Jesus means God, our deliverer, you know, or the deliverance of God. That's the same name that Joshua meant, that Moses gave him that name. So he's the one that called him Jehoshua or Joshua. Now, most of us are familiar with what happened here. The 12 spies went in and they brought back their report saying it's a really great land. It's plentiful. It's abundant. Say, look at this cluster of grapes that two guys brought on a stick, one cluster of grapes that they had to carry on this big pole between their shoulders. And he said, everything grows very lush, very pleasant, but here's the bad news. Their cities are like fortified. The people that live here are huge. We saw the sons of Anak there. They're like, these are like Goliath people. You know, in fact, I think Goliath was related to these guys, the Anakims, the son of Anak. And they were probably left over from the Rephaims that used to live there in the days of Abraham, where it says Chedorlaomer the king, you know, he defeated the Rephaims and the Zamzumims and the Emims in that land of Canaan. And the word Rephaim means giants. They're very tall people. There's also a battle that Joshua fights later on with Og, the king of Bashan. And it describes him as one of the remnant of the giants, and that he had a bed of iron that was 9 cubits long, which is like 13 and a half feet. And that was the size of his bed. It's bigger than king size today, you know. But he was a big guy. So they saw these huge guys, and they were just scared to death of him. They said, we felt like grasshoppers in their sight, and that's how we looked to them, too. So it says that all the people, all of them, except for two, cried out and said, God must have brought us here to kill us all. There weren't enough graves in Egypt, apparently, and he brought us out here to wipe us all out with our wives and our children. And they started crying and saying, let's make a captain to lead us back to Egypt. Maybe Pharaoh will give us our old jobs back if we ask him very nicely. And we'll pick up the story in chapter 14 in verse 4, where they said, and they said one to another, let us make a captain, let us return unto Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Caleb was one of the other spies from the tribe of Judah. So Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes. They tore their clothes. And they said unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. Only rebel not ye against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. We're going to chew them up and we're going to take over. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle. So God had to intervene and protect Caleb and Joshua from getting stoned. But these two guys, what Joshua said there, it wasn't necessarily by revelation. It was known information, right? It was known unto all of them that God had promised this land to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moses had commanded them to go in and search out the land, not to see whether they could take it or not, but to describe the land so they would know what they were inheriting. It was the other 10 guys that were with them that were, you know, the chicken-hearted fellows that said, we're not going to make it. And everybody sided with the 10 instead of the 2. So we know that there was 2 to 3 million people of Israel. And apparently at this moment, only four of them believed God. Had Aaron and Moses that fell down before God, knew to, you know, intercede for the people before God. And you had Joshua and Caleb that stood up and spoke to the people and said, we can do this. God is with us. And they were just telling him information that they had all already known. All the people had the same information, but only two, plus, you know, Moses and Aaron, out of a couple of million believed that information and were willing to act on it. And Joshua was one of them. You see? You know, when you talk about one in a million, that was like the ratio of believers to unbelievers among God's people, among the people that God had chosen, among the people that God had given his word to. You know, it was one in a million that really actually believed. And Joshua was one of those. Now let's go to chapter 27. Chapter 27. And we're going to start in verse 15. Now this follows an incident in the wilderness of Zin. There was a second time that the people ran out of water to the point they were all like really getting thirsty and getting very concerned for their families, their animals, nothing to drink. And they really got on Moses' case, because this is like towards the end of the 40 years. So the ones that are the oldest are the ones that, you know, originally refused to go into the promised land. A lot of them had died in the wilderness. God said, you know, you refuse to go in, you refuse to believe. God's original thing he was going to do was just to wipe them all out and start with Moses and say, we'll have your family go in. You know, it'd be like a Noah situation. But Moses said, no, don't do that, God. And there's more than one time God was going to do that. I think the golden calf incident was one, and this other time was another, where God says, I'm going to wipe them all out. And Moses, we'll just start with you and we'll repopulate. And Moses said, no, don't do it. Forgive the people. They're your people. You chose them. You asked me to bring them out, but they're your people. They're not mine. You know, I'm among them, but they belong to you. You brought them out of Egypt. If you wipe them all out, what's everyone going to say? They're going to say that you weren't able to bring them into the promised land. That'll make you look bad, God. We don't want that to happen. So God said, okay, but here's what we're going to do. Everyone that's 20 years old and up that could have believed, they had my word, they refused to believe, they will not go into the promised land. They're going to die in the wilderness. You're going to stay in the wilderness 40 years. One year for each day that you spied out the land. At the end of the 40 years, their children that are now 20 years old and under, they will go into the promised land. So during that 40 years, he had a lot of stuff happen. They wandered around. You know, God would tell them when to move and when to stay. There's people that rebelled against Moses and didn't like him, and God had to deal with those situations. Towards the end of that 40 years, Moses is about 120 years old, and he's had it up to here. And when these people just complained to him over the water, you know, he said, okay, God, what are we doing? And God said, Moses, I want you to, it's a different rock than the first time, but I want you to take your rod and I want you just to speak to that rock and water will come out of the rock. He said, speak to the rock and water will come out. And Moses got up and he, instead of speaking to the rock, he spoke to the people. He said, you rebels, you know, do we have to make water come out of this rock for you? like we did 40 years ago. And he took his stick and he banged it on the rock and he banged it again and water came out. So the people had water, but God told Moses and Aaron, he said, you disobeyed me. You didn't do what I told you. I told you to speak to the rock. You smote the rock, and that's not what I told you to do. So the people still had their water, but God told Moses, you will not be able to go into the promised land because of this. And Moses asked him again about it. He said, no, could I please? And God said, no, don't ask me again. I'll show it to you before you die. And took him up on the top of the mountain and showed him the whole land. But he said, you won't be able to go in. So Moses said, and this is right after God, I'll read these verses, start in verse 12. The Lord said unto Moses, get thee up into Mount Abarim, and see the land which I have given unto the children of Israel. And when thou hast seen it, thou shalt be gathered unto thy people as Aaron thy brother was gathered. Because Aaron had already died at this point. For ye rebelled against my commandment in the desert of Zin, in the strife of the congregation to sanctify me at the water before their eyes, which is the water of Meribah and Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. And Moses spake unto the Lord, saying, let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not as sheep which have no shepherd. Because he remembered the last time he was away from them for 40 days, they made a golden calf, they abandoned the word of God. So Moses said, okay, I'll accept what you told me, but do this. Set a man over everybody so that they have a leader. And the Lord said unto Moses, verse 18, take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay thine hand upon him, and set him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. The charge would be a commandment. And thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest. Now, Eleazar was the son of Aaron, who became high priest after Aaron. Okay. He shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall ask counsel of him after the judgment of Urim before the Lord. At his word, at Joshua's word, shall they go out, and at his word shall they come in, both he and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. And he laid his hands upon him and gave him a charge as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. So Moses didn't just pick Joshua as the obvious choice to take over for him, did he? You know, it could have been Moses' son instead. He had two sons. One was named Gershom, and I forget what the other one's name was. But it could have been one of Moses' sons, just like Aaron had Eleazar, his son, take over as high priest for him, right? Joshua was, he had led the army against the Amalekites. He was his personal assistant, there were times where he wrote stuff down that Moses told him. He was a faithful man. He was, one of the very few that really believed. But he asked God, set someone over the people. And he didn't tell God who to do it. He didn't say, I would suggest Joshua. He just says, whoever you pick. And it was God that named Joshua as the one who would take over. And he said, here's what you're going to need to do. You're going to hold an assembly before all the people, put your hand upon them, give them a commandment, specific orders, and I'll put some of the honor that's upon you upon Joshua so that they will listen to Joshua. Because they wouldn't necessarily do it automatically. They didn't listened to Aaron when Moses wasn't there. Aaron caved into the people and made that golden calf. So this is going to be a very important transfer of authority here, but it's by God's direction. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 31. The whole book of Deuteronomy happens within a short amount of time. It's Moses' last meeting with the people, and he retells all the events that happened from the time that they left Egypt. And he retells them the law, everything that God told them to obey. And he goes over the blessing and the curse of the law. And plus there's a song that God teaches to Moses and Joshua that they teach to the people. And in chapter 31, verse 14, "And the Lord said unto Moses, Behold, thy days approach that thou must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tabernacle of the congregation, that I may give him a charge." Now, up to this point, you don't see God talking directly to Joshua, do you? Because we've read pretty much all the records so far concerning Joshua. But in none of them do you have a record of God speaking to Joshua. You have God speaking to Moses concerning Joshua. But God says that I may give him a charge. We're halfway through that, verse 14. "And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle of the congregation. And the Lord appeared in the tabernacle in a pillar of a cloud, and the pillar of the cloud stood over the door of the tabernacle. And the Lord said unto Moses, Behold, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, and this people will rise up and go a-whoring after the gods of the strangers of the land, whither they go to be among them, and will forsake me, and break my covenant which I have made with them. Then my anger shall be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them, and they shall be devoured, and many evils and troubles shall befall them, so that they will say in that day, Are not these evils come upon us, because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day for all the evils which they shall have wrought, in that they have turned unto other gods. Now therefore write ye this song for you, and teach it the children of Israel, and put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel." So God taught him a song and told him to teach it. And so he gave that song to Moses and to Joshua, and they two got up in front of everybody and said, "Hey, okay, here's the song." And they did it for everybody, and it was all about how they would do evil before God and ages to come, and God would bring evil upon them, and then they would turn back to God. So they would sing the song, and it might be hundreds of years before it all came to pass, but they would remember, yeah, this happened just like in that song that we've been singing all along. It was interesting. So go to verse 22. "Moses therefore wrote this song the same day and taught it the children of Israel. And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, Be strong and of a good courage, for thou shalt bring the children of Israel into the land which I swear unto them, and I will be with thee." So who gave him the charge? Actually, it's God, because God said, "I will be with thee," right? So it looks kind of like Moses gave it to him, but it's God speaking to Joshua.
Through Moses or
directly
in the cloud?
I thought you said Moses.
Yeah, because Moses wrote the song and taught it, but 23 says he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge. And I would think that would be Moses, except at the end it says, "And I will be with thee." Moses wouldn't be with him.
Yeah.
God would be with him, right? So this is God giving him a charge.
Was it like a word prophecy?
could be. But let's read again. And he gave Joshua the son of Nun a charge and said, be strong and of a good courage, for thou shalt bring the children of Israel into the land which I, God, swear unto them, and I, God, will be with thee. So that's God's words to Joshua.
You know what? If you look at verse 21,
mm-hmm.
the I is referring to God. Then you have like almost a parenthesis in verse 22 about writing the song.
Oh, okay.
And then you go back in 23, you know, where God...
So the he would go back, refer back to God then. Very good. All right.
Well, Moses will be dead by then, right?
Right. That's why Moses wouldn't be with him.
Yeah.
So it would have to be God. Let's go to chapter 34 now. Last few verses of the book of Deuteronomy. Now, this tells how Moses went up to the top of the mountain and God showed him all the land. And we'll pick it up in verse 4. And the Lord said unto him, to Moses, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab. God buried him, or had an angel do it, you know, over against Beth Peor, but no man knoweth of his sepulchre unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. And Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom. For Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel hearkened unto him and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, in all the signs and the wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land, and in all that mighty hand and in all the great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel. So at the time those last three verses were written, there had not risen a prophet in Israel like unto him, though Moses did say that there would be a prophet that would rise up like unto him. And we know from things that are written in the book of Acts and the book of Hebrews that that was referring to Jesus Christ. But again, the word Jesus is the same as the word Joshua. And Joshua was very much like Moses. If you turn the next page, you get to the book of Joshua, chapter 1. And I'd like to read this with you. And this is about all the time that we'll have to look at Joshua. But now we see God dealing with Joshua very much directly without Moses being present. And here's what happens. Chapter 1, verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. They had to take that in. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I to give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. Now, it's saying this is as I said. So God is repeating many of the things that Joshua already knew, because he was there when Moses received the information from God. He was there when God talked to him. He was there on the mountain. He was with him in the tabernacle whenever God would speak with him. So, and he remembered the things that God said, and God made sure that he wouldn't forget because he reminded him. And he has one of these places where he puts the future in the past tense. You know, the place where you will walk, which is future, I have already given to you. Okay, it's already yours. You know, Moses, you know, he told Abraham, God told Abraham that I have made you a father of many nations before he had his first child. So this is one of those ways of saying it. It's a figure of speech and very powerful. Verse 4, from the wilderness and this great Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast, your borders. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. And Joshua knew firsthand how God was with Moses. So he had all those years of preparation, all those, you know, 40-some years preparing him for this time. Verse 6, be strong and of a good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This is so important. To receive revelation from God, it is so important to be aware of and to believe the revelation that has already been given and written down. God is talking to Joshua right now, and he's saying, I will be with you all the days of your life. I will speak to you, but I've already given information to Moses. You make sure that you know it and do it, then you will prosper. If you would forget what I had commanded Moses and what Moses had commanded you and everybody else and what Moses had written down, it's not going to happen. So you don't make a choice between the written word and what comes by the Spirit of God. We need both. Okay? We need both. In our day and time, we need both. What's in the written word and what comes personally to you by the Spirit of God. We need both. God doesn't give both so you can choose. He gives both because you need both. Right? Verse 8, this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth. You know, if you just stop there, it sounds like you would never speak it, right? It means you will never stop speaking it, is what he's saying. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night. Meditate means speaking to yourself. Say, every day of your life, all day long, be repeating to yourself the things that are written in the Word of God, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. Don't pick and choose either. Don't just stick with your favorite verses. All of it. Okay? All that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid. Neither be thou dismayed. Now, it sounds like God's beating a dead horse here. It's like, okay, I'm already strong and courageous. There will be times coming where Joshua will need this. There will be situations coming where Joshua will feel like God's abandoned him. We won't have time to read it this morning, but he'll face situations down the road where you understand why it's necessary for God to keep hammering this home. Verse 9 again. Have not I commanded thee, be strong and of a good courage, be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. It means ready to give up. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. And that was the words to Joshua. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host, command the people, saying, prepare you victuals, for within 3 days ye shall pass over this Jordan to go into possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it. And then he deals with the Reubenites and the Gadites and half the tribe of Manasseh. They had made a deal with Moses about staying on the other side, but they said, we will go in to the promised land, we'll fight with the people until the land is conquered, and then we'll return. But we'll let our wives and children stay on the other side of the river. So he reminded them of that, and they agreed to it. And then in the coming chapters, God will give him specific instructions how to cross the Jordan River, you know, which was at flood stage at the time. What, how to start conquering the land, what, you know, everything that they had to do. As long as Joshua would listen to God, everything would work. There will be times where Joshua forgets to ask God. Disaster happens. There's times where Joshua gets afraid. You know, God has to patch him up again. But it'd be good to read the whole book of Joshua and see those things. But for this morning, what I wanted to do is see how God prepared Joshua before he got to this time so that he could be a prophet and a leader of God's people. Okay, so God, we thank you for the wonderful things in your word that we, you know, thousands of years later, we can still learn from these things and see how you worked with a man like Joshua and how you built him up and how you helped him and how you trained him, how you gave him such great experience working with a man like Moses, but how important your written word was to him, and for him to have his eyes and ears open to you. And we know there's more to learn about this, and maybe we will in the weeks ahead. But we thank you for these things that we've learned and that we've seen, and we pray that having seen this in your word, it can help us in our walk today and tomorrow and the next day and the weeks and months to come. And we thank you that, you know, these men were tremendous servants to you and did your will. But we also thank you that we have the great privilege of knowing you as our Father and having your compassion and your mercy and your willingness to work with each one of us, and how we all have your Spirit, not just upon us to get a job done, but born within us. First of all, to have a relationship with you, and then to get work done that you've called us to do. So we thank you for these things in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.